This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 292, for the weekend of May 12th through May 14th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and we have famously large turds, and this is Backseat Box Office. I ruined the joke. Hello, everybody. How's it going? Art, what's going on over there?
Not much. Same old, same old. Just, you know, trying to make it through the week. Starting to warm up here in Texas. That's both a good thing and a bad thing.
Yes. So, did you see the big movie, Art?
I did not.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, we probably should have talked about this then. Okay. All right. So I'm going to be talking about it. It might get a little spoilery. Well, since Art hasn't seen it, probably not too much. I just wanted to warn you ahead of time. So yeah. Unless you have anything else you want to talk about.
No. I'll just make sure and plug my ears and go blah, 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 blah. You know.
Yeah, you know. Anyways. I don't know. I just felt like saying that. All right. So speaking of the big movie, let's talk about how well it did at the box office last week. So what I'm talking about is we usually at this point in the show talk about, hey, how did the movies do at the box office last week? So for the weekend of May 5th through May 7th, here is your top five. At number one, the only new release, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, pulled in $146.5 million in a whopping 4,347 theaters. And Art always likes to know the budget. Yeah, their budget reported at $200 million. At number two, in its fourth week release, we have The Fate of the Furious at $8.6 million. At number three, in its sixth week of release, The Boss Baby at $6.0 million. At number four in its second week of release, How to Be a Latin Lover, $5.1 million on 1,200 screens. Wow. And at number five in its eighth week of release, Beauty and the Beast, $5.1 million for a whopping total of $487 million domestic.
Creeping ever closer to that 1 billion mark.
Yeah.
I mean, half a billion.
Right now, it is almost half a billion domestic. Worldwide, it is 1.186 billion right now.
There you go.
And as a comparison, opening weekend was 174 domestic. So, Guardians didn't do as great, but what are you going to do?
It didn't have as much of a legacy to live up to either. And it's less of a market. I mean, one's PG, the other one's PG-13.
Well, I think there is a lot more nostalgia and there's a lot more fan baggage coming with Beauty and the Beast.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So there were your top five. Okay. Now we're going to move on over what's coming out this weekend. But I do feel like that there is something I need to talk about before we get to that. Art and myself, we organized a little summer box office contest. And so we have five participants. Art, myself, Tony from the Backseat Producers, and then our two serial voicemailers, Tad and William. So we did a little email draft. So each participant is going to pick four movies. Art got first pick, as you will see in just a second. And I got second, Tony got third. Was it Tad fourth? I think it was Tad fourth. Yep. And then William, or no, it was the other way around.
It was the other way around.
Okay. William fourth and then Tad fifth. So what we're going to do is as we traverse, the summer of movies, we are going to mention which movies, had been taken by someone. So kind of a rewind to last week. Art with the first pick. He's no dummy. He ended up with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And how this contest is going to work is that we are going to be using the first 3 weeks of release. So Art will get that dollar amount for the first 3 weeks of however Guardians of the Galaxy does. And we're going to total up every participant's four movies, and the highest total will win. So what did they win? Nothing.
Bragging rights.
The adulation of the other participants.
Yes.
And
as far as being no dummy, I was a hair's breadth away from taking Spider-Man. And that ended up not getting drafted till much later. Another draft I listened to, that was the second movie picked. I really felt like that was going to be a close contender. But we shall see as the weeks move on.
Okay, so that shot is being fired across my bow because I had the second pick. And I ended up going with Despicable Me 3.
Also a very good pick. Like I said, that other draft I listened to, I'm going to make some comparisons over the next coming weeks because it was very interesting. I got to make up a little chart for a side-by-side comparison.
Okay. All right. So now that has been thrown out there, let's get to the two movies that are coming out in wide release this weekend. And spoiler alert, both movies got taken by two participants. So Art, why don't you tell us about the first one?
Okay, the first movie on the list is King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. This is 24% rotten, 50 reviews counted, 12 fresh, 38 rotten. 96% want to see it out of 14,243 user rating. Acclaimed filmmaker Guy Ritchie brings his dynamic style to the epic fantasy action adventure King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Starring Charlie Hunnam in the title role, the film is an iconoclastic take on the classic Excalibur myth, tracing Arthur's journey from the streets to the throne. When the child Arthur's father is murdered, Vortigern, Jude Law, Arthur's uncle, seizes the crown. Robbed of his birthright and with no idea who he truly is, Arthur comes up the hard way in the back alleys of the city. But once he pulls the sword from the stone, his life is turned upside down and he is forced to acknowledge his true legacy, whether he likes it or not. Rated PG-13 for sequences of violence and action, some suggestive content, and brief, strong language. Genres action, adventure, and drama, directed by Guy Ritchie, written by Joby Harold, Guy Ritchie, and Lionel Wigram. We do not have a listed runtime.
Interesting.
So in addition to Charlie Hunnam, we have Astrid Frisbee, Digimon Hansu, Eric Bana, Jude Law, Aidan Gillen, and Annabelle Wallace.
Okay, so the actress that played Guinevere, I believe, was the mermaid in The Last Pirates.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, she looks familiar.
I was done after three.
Yeah.
Three was enough for me. But Jude Law, Eric Bana, Juwan Hansu, those are all.
Where's Merlin? Where's Lancelot? And they switched that out for Goose Fat Bill. Okay, I don't understand.
They got Sir Bevedere. Have you ever played Shadows Over Camelot?
No.
Okay. There is an expansion and the expansion character is Sir Bevedere. Bedivere. But anyway. Part of me is really, really interested in this. There was a time when I could not get enough Arthurian legend stuff. I watched Excalibur when I was way, way, way too young. I still own it on DVD. I watched the original, was it like 1956 Camelot, I'm interested, but I don't know. That is a lot in Rotten Tomato, rotten ratings.
All right. So let's talk about some of these what some of the critics are saying. I'm going to start with a couple fresh ones. Dave Calhoun from Time Out. This is fresh. It's patchy and chaotic, but also an energetic spectacle. He gave it 3 out of 5 stars. And then we have Joshua Starnes of ComingSoon.net. Despite creativity and a willingness to experiment on display, in the rush to change things, no one has figured out how to fit the new pieces together. So that was a fresh rating of 6 out of 10. Some of the rotten blurbs. This is from Lindsay Barr from AP or Associated Press. Despite a shameless non-ending that hints at sequel possibilities, this is not a film that is likely to stick with you even past the movie theater parking lot. Like Arthur, you'll be happy that you got out. You'll be happy that you got alive and relatively unscathed. You missed a word there. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was trying to do some on-the-fly editing there. And then Diana Sanger from Review Express. Poor visuals, very confusing, boring. So yeah, this is a wait for video, especially when I still have an unopened DVD of The Last King Arthur.
Oh.
With Keira Knightley on the cover.
Yeah, and was that Clive Owen?
It's way over there. Aren't we asking me questions?
I don't know. I thought you remembered Keira Knightley. I thought you might remember some of the other people who were in it.
That's, no big deal. Now you know that's how I bought it. Okay. So yeah, King Arthur. And I have a shocking confession. I've never seen Excalibur.
Oh wow, Excalibur is so good.
Now for a school project, I had to read an adaptation of the Tales of King Arthur.
Okay.
I'm very familiar with the story.
I read the entire chapter from Bullfinch's Mythologies, but yeah, Excalibur is still it's such a classic. Mm-hmm. It was very formative in my childhood. Like I said, I watched it on cable when I was way too young to have watched it, and I still love it to this day. I would recommend it.
On a side note, have you ever played the role playing game Pendragon?
I have not.
Okay.
I've heard good things.
It was okay. I mean, it's a Palladium. So take from that what you will. But
No, it is not.
It's not?
Try again. That is not Palladium. That's older. That's I believe it's the RuneQuest system, so that would put it by Chaosium, if I remember correctly. Almost positive. I'm about 90% positive on that.
I always thought it was Palladium, but it says here Chaosium. Yeah, that's the cover.
I know my stuff, dude. Yeah.
Chaosium, Green Knight Publishing, White Wolf. Wow. Okay. Anyways, onward to the next movie.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, King Arthur is Williams' number 4. So sorry to hear that one. Anyways, so my number 4 is the movie Snatched. And I will say that I'm the only one that took a comedy in the last round. Anyways, Snatched is 39% on the tomato meter. So it's not much higher than King Arthur. So I don't even know what I'm talking about. Okay. Out of 31 reviews, 12 fresh and 19 rotten. Out of 7,504 Rotten Tomatoes users, 82% want to see it. So here's the description, as if it mattered. After her boyfriend dumps her on the eve of their exotic vacation, impetuous dreamer Emily Middleton, Amy Schumer, persuades her ultra-cautious mother, Linda, Goldie Hawn, to travel with her to paradise. Polar opposites, Emily and Linda realize that working through their differences as mother and daughter in unpredictable, hilarious fashion is the only way to escape the wildly outrageous jungle adventure they have fallen into. Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn star in this new comedy adventure, Snatched, which also features Ike Barinholtz from Neighbors, Wanda Sykes from Bad Moms, and Joan Cusack from Working Girl. This is rated R for crude sexual content, brief nudity, and language throughout. Genre is action and adventure and comedy, written by Katie Dippold, directed by Jonathan Levine, and this will cost you 91 minutes. So, who is in the cast that I haven't mentioned yet? Christopher Maloney, Randall Park, and Colin Quinn.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm not feeling good about this. Okay, so some of our choice blurbs. I don't even know. Oh, hey, there is some fresh ones. Gary Thompson, who gave it a 2.5 out of 4, a merciful and mostly painless 90 minutes. Right above that one is a rotten from Joanna Langfield from the Movie Minute. All it says is, oh, Amy. Bill Gutekunst from Arizona Republic. What a mess. So yeah, even though I picked it, I don't think I'm gonna see it in the theater.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's no second guessing at this point, but I mean, I don't know. I felt like there were so many other good picks you could have went with. Atomic Blonde. There was another one that I was eyeing instead of Valerian City of a Thousand Planets, which I ended up picking for my fourth pick. Spoiler. But anyway, this.
You know why I took this movie?
Why did you take this movie? Tell me.
Mother's Day.
Oh, that is good. You know what? When Things Were Leasing did not figure into my metrics.
Oh, it figured. Kind of a spoiler to later analysis of the draft. In the second round, I had the Hobson's choice of Alien Covenant or Dunkirk, and I got talked into that Alien Covenant, when it comes out, really doesn't have any competition.
Okay.
And historically, World War II films, even though Dunkirk is supposed to do really good, don't make a lot of money. So we'll see. And at the time when all you can hear about is that we're going to war with North Korea, and I don't take a war movie. So I call the shot. So we'll see how it goes. All right. So that is going to be our look at what has come out at the theater, or what is coming out in the theater this weekend. And so now, in the absence of voicemails, Art is going to tell us what he watched. This is the part of the show where we call share time, where we just talk about what we've been doing since we talked last. So Art, what do you got?
Okay, so I finished up the first season of The Magicians, and this had to be one of the, I don't know how to convey, I literally the episode ended and I gasped and I was breathless and I wanted more. And it's only one season available on Netflix. I think the second season is running right now. I'll have to look into that. It finished very strong. I was very happy with it overall, and I'm very excited to see where it goes next. We watched The Descendants.
George Clooney?
No.
Oh.
The Disney Descendants.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The one about the kids of villains.
Right.
So Maleficent's daughter, the evil queen from Snow White's daughter, Jafar's son, and Cruella DeVille's son. And they do some very interesting world building, and the stars are all, people from different Disney shows. And it was actually, it's a musical. I found it more enjoyable than I thought it would be. They are actually leading up to, we picked it up on DVD because they are doing a sequel to Descendants 2, is coming up in the next month and a half. So picked that up on DVD, watched it. Aubrey has watched it many, many, multiple times. I've watched it once. But it was enjoyable for what it was. I wasn't expecting too much, and I was entertained. The songs were good. Like I said, they did some interesting world building. The new king is the son of Beauty and the Beast. And he sets all these things into motion. It's very interesting. But anyway, if you are into musicals and Disney teen drama, comedy, musical, I think you'd find it enjoyable. If you're not, then don't go anywhere near it, because it is not. It's a Disney movie. A Disney, channel movie, not a Disney 2 theater movie.
Mm-hmm.
It has me interested in what they're going to do with Descendants 2. I've heard that the main character they're introducing is Ursula's daughter. So we shall see where that goes. The other thing, I started watching The Fall of Halo, The Fall of Reach. and that's been interesting. And
what was that on?
That's on Netflix.
Okay.
And it has me intrigued. I just, you know, when the Magicians ended, I started looking around to see what else I wanted to start. And instead of starting a series, I went with a movie so that I could start it, finish it, add it to the list, and then maybe pick up a series after that. So we'll see where it goes. But so far I'm enjoying it. It's interesting. You know, I've never actually played Halo. I am tangentially familiar with it in many forms. We'll see. It's interesting. It's like a backstory history kind of a thing. So last weekend, I got out for games on a couple of occasions, went over to the in-laws' house and got them to play Survive Escape from Atlantis. Again, we had played it a week or two ago. And so they had liked it enough that they requested it again. So brought it back out. Played it again, had more fun, which I'm very happy because I really bought it specifically to play with them. I thought it would be something they would enjoy, that it was easy enough to learn and yet still very cutthroat. And so everybody's having a lot of fun with that. Went out to the gaming store on Saturday and got to play... Learned 8-Minute Empire Legends, which is a game that has been in my collection since I believe it was 2013 when the Kickstarter fulfilled or launched, or when the game came out. And I hadn't actually played it, but they had their own copy there at the store, and they taught me how to play. So now I learned how to play, and now I'm happy that I Kickstarted that game, even though I never got it to the table. It is a Red Raven game, so it is from Ryan Lucat, the creator of Above and Below and Empires of the Void and City of Iron. And he is the one man design team who he designs the game. He does the art for the game and he does the layout for the game. So
did you say Islebound? Didn't you do Islebound?
He did Islebound as well. Yeah. I have a few of his games, and everyone I've managed to play, I enjoy. So this was no surprise. But I really, really liked it a lot, enough that I told the guy on the spot, why don't you go ahead and order the expansion for this for me?
okay.
So yeah, we played that. We played Abyss, which I've talked about playing before, because that's in my collection. I taught everybody thoroughly enjoyed it, to the point where the owner of the store said, I am going to have to order this to carry in the store. So,
okay.
So we were going back and forth there. Let's see. And then I taught Santorini. Then we headed back to Richard's house. Richard's the guy I met the week before. And we've become very fast friends. We're both heavily into games. And we played... What did we play? Oh, we played more Escape because another guy showed up with his girlfriend. She was more of a lighter gamer. And then we actually played another game of Abyss. So it was good times all around. I got plenty of games I actually enjoyed to the table. And I think that's about it for my share time. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. It was another private screening put on by my friendly neighborhood comic book store.
Mm-hmm.
So usually it's me and my son, but my coworker Frankie, who's also in my gaming group, I offered and he said that he would like to come. So the three of us went. And I was really impressed with Volume 2.
Nice.
Just because he moved the pieces around on the board a little bit, so it didn't feel like I'm just gonna copy the same structure as the first one, and some of the heavy lifting that was done by certain characters were basically they did the same things, but they were given to other characters. So Star-Lord didn't have the most jokes in this one.
Okay.
Which was refreshing. Drax, to me, stole the movie. And Baby Groot might be the cutest thing I've ever seen on screen. I know for a fact that James Gunn is a big proponent of animals. And so this was basically his pet that he was, you know, parading around through the entire movie. Story-wise, I didn't really have any foreknowledge of this whole story. But I think it did a good job. I will mark him down a little bit in that there's no reason that this has to be in a two and a half hour movie.
Okay.
There is more than a handful of scenes that he basically conveyed what he wanted to convey in the scene. It just went a little longer than I thought. So it's interesting that there was a website that compared this to Empire Strikes Back because it has a lot of similarities to Empire Strikes Back. But I really can't talk about some of them without spoiling it. So, maybe we'll talk about that later. Performance wise, I mean, everybody I think did a great job. I was shocked that it's still Vin Diesel. They just affected his voice, kind of thing. There is a part in the movie where, I mean, because I know James Gunn has a vicious streak. If you've seen Super, you know what I'm talking about. And I think there's one scene in the movie where Yondu lets loose with the arrow that I felt like he got to be, you know, himself kind of thing. As opposed to, you know that they're probably getting noted to death nowadays because they have to hit certain points to keep the continuity going towards Infinity War.
Right.
Kind of thing. That's probably why Joss will never do another Marvel movie because he had a really bad experience with Age of Ultron. But yeah, it is. We're going to talk about later about how family. This is probably the most family friendly of all the films. But there were a couple of cringe worthy moments for me. You know, because I'm watching with my son.
Right.
Who he thought it was better than the first one. He loved all the jokes, but the jokes are right in his demo.
Right.
James Gunn is not going to go highbrow humor on you. That's pretty much. The new characters, I enjoyed Manus. Even though I kind of wanted to see her more, and I thought in the comics she was a little more powerful. I thought she was a Kree or something like that, but they didn't really go into that at all. In the film. But considering all of the hangups that you have with the sequel and all the expectations, I thought he did a very good job. And word to the wise, stick around after the credits, not for one scene, but five.
I had heard four like some months ago.
It might be four.
I was going to say, and then just recently I heard five. So now you're the second person who said five. So yeah, but as of a few months ago, it was already going to be four. And so now I hear, and now it's up to five. So yeah.
Yeah, it's, we didn't get anything continuity wise, I think, in the extra scene in the last one.
Right.
I know there was two, right? Because they showed Howard. They showed Howard the Duck, and then they Groot did his little dance.
Right.
Or Baby Groot does a little dance kind of thing. So there's one that ties into where we're going. The other ones are just bits, pretty much. And I know my wife cannot take the motion, but that there is one post-credit scene that every mother of a teenager has to see.
Okay.
Has to see. The music that was such a hit. I was a little underwhelmed with the music. They kind of went for, at least for me, more obscure music, and it was more of the soft rock kind of thing, where I'm more of a rock and roll kind of guy. Mm. I definitely enjoyed it. Definitely have to go see it. And I'm shocked because I'm going around. As I'm going around my work and people are asking me how Guardians was, there are a couple people that said they just watched the first one like a couple months ago. And I am, you know, I'm just flabbergasted. As far as other things, I haven't really watched any TV or movies. We had a little problem with our DVR. We noticed because we usually hover around 15% free, 20% free. We got up one morning and it said 65% free.
No, no.
So I went and looked, and for the most part, I think that everything was still there.
Huh.
But I'm noticing most of the series that I'm recording, there's missing episodes.
Oh.
It dropped half of the Walking Dead ones. It dropped three of Silicon Valley, which that's the one I wanted, the television series I wanted to watch the most. So I'm a little, you know, I'm a little butthurt about that. But I was reading about last weekend was Free Comic Book Day, and I didn't make it, so you know, to Free Comic Book Day. But I was reading this thing about the comic book stores; they have to pay for the free comic books.
Yeah.
And he's saying that if you go buy something, so I went Sunday. And I picked up a graphic novel that I've been wanting to pick up for a while. I picked up the volume one of Saga. It is really good. I'm surprised that I haven't heard about a Savage World setting for Saga. I mean, because it's like kitchen sink kind of thing. So far in the first chapter of this graphic novel, there's a childbirth, and then there's a firefight between what looks like Colonial Marine or Marines and magic users of some kind. And I don't even know what kind of magic it is, but it's a Brian K. Vaughan, who's written other stuff. He also wrote Why the Last Man. I know he worked on Lost for a while. I think he's been a producer in all the J.J. Abrams films kind of thing. So I'm looking forward to reading the rest of it. I also got another one called Think Tank, because I kind of want to give a chance to like Dark Horse and Image. I did notice that they had a bunch of dollar comic books, and one of them was like issue one of New Mutants.
Nice.
But I guess there's a trade. They have a series of trades that kind of collects the beginnings of, you know, like the first 100 books
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And since they're going to be doing a New Mutants movie, I kind of want to brush up on my New Mutants. So anyways, so that's movies, TV, and comics. Had a game night last Friday. We were both backers of a little game, Rum and Bone Second Tide. Finally got that to the table. And the reason was my coworker, he went more crazy than I did. Because usually he has one or two games in his hands, and he has some of the bigger box games. Like, Matt, you know, he did a Kickstarter for Mass More, so he has a lot of Mass More stuff. He brought a box that had to be at least 3 feet tall. 3 feet tall, 3 feet wide, and it had CMON on the side, and I look in the box, and it's all add-ons and stretch goals. The base game wasn't even in the box. And it took us 15 minutes to unpack the box to look at all these, because he did the add-on because they have two other factions. They have, like, Iron Inquisition, which I think are dwarves or something like that, and then there's another one that are orcs. Iron might be orcs, but anyways. So we finally got it to the table, and by the time that we got all the bits and all the components out, and I was going through the rules, and they changed some things around, that I ultimately think it makes it better. I'm gonna have to read the rules again because I think in the first game you have five heroes. You have a captain, you have a swashbuckler, you have a gunner, you have a brute, and you have a quartermaster who's kind of like a leader kind of thing. He kind of buffs your regular guys. And you pick three to place, and then one of them gets knocked out because ultimately everyone comes back. They're just out for a couple turns. You can pick one of the three that you didn't, you know, you can pick like the captain if you didn't take the captain in the first three. They took that away, so you could only take the three, you know, the first three that you take, you're stuck with those three kind of thing. They also really improve the crew because the crew used to just do a straight line. The crew, depending on where they are on the ship, have a pre-programmed path, and it's not a straight line. And I think that really, for me, it improved things. Again, the Kraken decided the game. Because the first one to be beat the Kraken is the one who got all the who got three victory points, and that's hell. So this is just like Zaya. We're going to have to play it another four times in a row before I figure everything out. Because he's got the three second tide factions. I have three of the originals, and I ponied up for the upgrade kit so you can use your original factions from the first game in the second game. They also added upgrade cards, so you have to upgrade your abilities. That makes, you know, that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. And so it takes a little strategy because you have to read on what your guys can do, kind of thing. But be honest, we ended up playing for 4 hours. But we had a really good time. Had a really good time doing it. So that is Rum and Bones, Second Tide. And Tony asked me about Zaya because he heard us talking about Zaya. So Rum and Bones can be found on Board Game Geek. It's also published by CMON, which I don't know if it's still short for Cool Mini or not. I don't know. But you can find him at CMON.com. All right. So I think that's going to end my share time.
Okay.
So unless you have any objections, let's move over to news. So, Art, how are you going to, broaden our horizons?
Okay. So, I found a new little tab on the Rotten Tomatoes site, and it is their weekly catch up, and they go back and they round up the news stories from the past weeks previous. And I don't know how I missed this. I remember we were talking about, been talking about a lot of movies that are getting rebooted. This one caught my eye for a couple of reasons. So Robert Downey Jr. will revive Dr. Doolittle and more news. Had you heard about this? Did we talk about this? I don't think we did. Because
no, I don't think it really piqued my interest at all.
Okay. I was a huge Dr. Doolittle fan when I was younger. I mean, like the original, like the one from, what was it, the 50s, 60s? Mm-hmm. With the Push Me, Pull You and the, you know, I don't know. But yeah. And then the first one they rebooted with Eddie Murphy was somewhat enjoyable, but it was not quite up to the standards of like how they had rebooted the Willy Wonka franchise. I really appreciated that one. This one was not to that level. But it'll be interesting to see where they go. And I really do enjoy Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, yeah.
So it will be interesting to see how this goes. How, you know, it's another, like I said, I don't know why they're calling this a live action remake, because Dr. Doolittle wasn't a cartoon. Somebody is the writer of the article right there calls it a live action. They expand their live action remake franchise. This is just a live action movie that they've done in the past. So, like I said, it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. I will be keeping an eye out for this.
All right. Well, I want to talk some more about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Okay. So this is from the Hollywood Reporter. And this is this discussion kind of is focused on the box on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and the box office. And the title is How the Family-Friendly Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 Beat Sequel Fatigue. So one number they're throwing out there that it came in, the movie came in 54% ahead of the first Guardians, one of the biggest growth spurts for a superhero series in recent times. They're saying that enjoyed a bigger increase than Batman versus Superman did over Man of Steel, 43%, or any Avengers, Iron Man, or Thor installment in the MCU. One major exception remains Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight, which opened 222% ahead of Batman Begins. But why did Guardians do so well? Well, they're saying that it includes a stronger turnout among females and families, strong word of mouth, a prime release date, and the growing popularity of the cast, led by Chris Pratt, Vin Diesel, and Bradley Cooper. But it isn't just in the U.S. It also is pulling in bigger numbers overseas. In South Korea, it lifted up with $13.3 million, eclipsing the entire run of the first movie, which topped out at 10. Overall, families made up 19% of the audience, especially strong showing for a superhero offering. Guardians earned $51 million on Saturday, the 11th best showing of all time. And Saturday, of course, is a traditional family movie-going day. The character Baby Groot is for sure appealing universally among families. As each of the Marvel movies come to redefine what the MCU is, this movie has a big family component, and maybe even one of the most. And I got to try to say his name. Adds box office analyst Paul Durgeribidian, okay, of ComScore, families were likely drawn by the Baby Groot character, who was featured smartly in front center in most of the marketing for the film. Despite the PG-13 rating, Guardians may be among the most family-friendly of all the superhero movies. And of course, it's paid off massively with the numbers on Saturday. They also said that females made it up 43% of ticket buyers versus 39% for the first film.
Interesting.
Younger moviegoers also turned out. 17% were 13 to 17 compared to 13% the first time out, while moviegoers between the ages of 18 to 24 jumped from 33% to 38%. So they're doing good. They're doing good.
All that being said, I meant to ask you a question. So Brittany saw, I forgot how we got onto the conversation about Guardians of the Galaxy. I think she asked, she had seen a commercial and, you know, she saw Baby Groot and she's like, why didn't you have me watch the first Guardians of the Galaxy? And I was like, I tried to have you watch the first Guardians of the Galaxy. You walked away. You didn't want to watch it. She's like, yeah, that totally sounds like me. I said, but yeah, I think you'd totally be into this. And I showed her the trailer, the first one with the giant bomb and, you know, Baby Groot saying, I am Groot. Groot. She's like, that's all he says is, I am Groot. She's like, yeah. She's like, this is adorable. So she might want to see it. My question is, what do you think about me taking Aubrey? Since they're saying it is one of the most family friendly of the bun, might be too much.
Okay, so there is a part of the movie where Baby Groot finds someone's cut off thumb.
Ah.
And it's a funny bit.
Right.
But that was one of the cringeworthy parts of it.
Okay.
How does she do with violence?
She is fine with violence. She's actually watched the first Avengers movie. We had this conversation. I told you about this because it was one night where me and Britt were just not up to being good parents. And we wanted to watch a movie. We wanted her to go to bed. She didn't want to go to bed. We were like, fine, just stay up and watch the movie with us. And she watched the movie. And, you know, there's that opening scene where Loki is just, you know, basically murderizing all those S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, you know. It's not bloody, but, you know, he's hitting them and they're not getting back up. And it was very violent and intense, you know. And that's right at the beginning of the movie. And we're like, okay, you know. That was two years ago at this point.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's a part of the movie where Yondu just kills hundreds of people. With the arrow.
But
and there's a lot of, you know, there's like a lot of neck shots and head shots and.
Yeah, but and I'm that sure it's all very quick cut and it's not, you know, blood splashing the screen. It's still, but yeah, it is violence. I don't know. I'm considering it, but I don't know. I might want to see it first, but Brittany has showed interest. And yeah, that Baby Groot is, you know, everybody's fallen in love with him.
Okay, how about this? There's a part of the movie where they're talking about Kurt Russell's junk. And Drax says the word penis.
She knows the word penis.
Okay, all right. I'm just throwing these things out here.
Yeah, no, we don't, you know, her mother's in her 20s and very liberal. And, you know, we don't shy away from being truthful.
Right.
You know, we're not showing her anything.
I understand that, but you know, you never.
Yeah.
No,
I appreciate you pointing it out, and I'm just telling you that that's how we're raising her. She knows, you know, it's like the little kid from Kindergarten Cop. You know, where he's like, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina.
Right.
You know, these are just natural facts of life.
No, but there was a family next to us where I think they had like 12-year-old girls.
Right.
You know, sitting next to us. So, I mean, and this goes back to when I went to the, the Batman R-rated Killing Joke.
Right.
And there was a dad with his little 11-year-old girl.
Right. See, I would.
Watching Batgirl and Batman doing stuff.
I would never take her to that. I would have never. Yeah. I won't let her see Deadpool.
No. I'm just saying, you know, there's there are parents that are more liberal than I am. That's all I'm saying.
Oh yeah, there are parents that are more liberal than I am.
Yeah,
you know, but I think this one's borderline.
Okay.
Know?
Yeah, I think she'd be okay.
I'm just trying to feel it out. So yeah, I mean, we might go see it together.
Yeah.
We'll see how it all works out. Okay.
All right. Was that you or me?
That was you, so this is me.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so this caught my eye. Cannes keeps Netflix movies in the competition, but says future films must have theatrical releases. So there was a couple of Netflix movies that did not get theatrical releases that were up for awards at the Cannes Film Festival. The Okja, which we talked about, and then the other one is the Meyerowitz stories. Meyerowitz stories?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they had talked about pulling them. There is a number of people in the industry, let's say, who wanted to see them pulled because they did not, you know, have a theatrical release. In the end, Cannes board decided to keep it in. But they released a statement that's saying in the future, all movies will have to have a theatrical release in France if they want to be considered for the Cannes Festival. Where is it here? There is a quote. It's from the Netflix CEO, and it's basically saying that this is the industry kind of, you know, seeking to bar them. You know, getting lockstep with each other to not move forward with how
they got to shut down the upstart.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, here it is. Yeah. Reacting to Cannes' new rules, Netflix Reed Hastings wrote on his Facebook account that the establishment is closing ranks against us.
Mm. Yep.
So we shall see. But that really caught my eye. So they're letting it slide for right now. But in the future, you must have a release.
Okay, so let's talk about some things that are going to be coming in the future. And I am shocked that you didn't hit this one first, Art.
Okay.
Shocked. Hellboy reboot script.
I was tossed up between that one and this one. Oh, no, wait. This isn't even. Go ahead. Keep going. Let's see where this goes.
Hellboy reboot script is both darker and done. It's got to be the same thing because this is Dark Horizons. Further details about the upcoming reboot of the Hellboy film franchise continue to come to light. So remember that Del Toro has nothing to do with this. And it's supposed to be much more in line with Mignola's original comics. Neil Marshall is set to direct. It's escaping me who that is. But the sheriff from Stranger Things, David Harbour, will be the titular hero.
Yep.
Yes, much more in line with Mignola's original comics than Del Toro's more colorful, bright, and fairy tale style take on the material. So, script's done, but we don't have any other timeline about when we're going to see this. But sounds interesting.
Well, the article I pulled up on Screen Rant says it appears Hellboy: Rise of the Blood Queen could start filming in just a few months.
Okay. Okay. All right, what do you got next?
All right. Alien Covenant may get two sequels. So I thought that was interesting. Ridley Scott has mentioned he could potentially make two more sequels to Alien Covenant. The follow-up to Prometheus will hit theaters this next week. So initial reactions indicate that it's a good but not great addition to the franchise. So we'll see how it goes, but depending on how it's received, he has up to two other stories he would like to tell. So we'll see where this goes.
Other Marvel news. It looks like we are getting a Deadpool animated series. It's going to be on FXX, same channel that has Archer.
Okay.
But the showrunners, you might have heard of them.
Oh, tell me.
Donald Glover and Stephen Glover
will
spearhead the new series as showrunners, executive producers, and writers. So the guys who created Atlanta, and it's going to debut in 2018, and they're going to have a 10 episode first season. I'm excited by this. Hopefully it's even close to the level of comedy that was in the movie, but who knows? Probably a lot easier to do it animated too. All right, Art, what you got next?
Okay. This caught my eye. Jared Leto may power up for Disney's Tron reboot. Considering Jared Leto's antics during the filming of last year's Suicide Squad, it's natural to speculate how far the method actor will go to prepare for any given role. For example, if he landed the lead role in a video game movie, would he do all he could to immerse himself in gamer culture? That's absolutely not an academic question. As news broke this afternoon that Walt Disney Pictures is now circling Jared Leto as a possible star in a new reboot of their Tron franchise. So it will be interesting to see where this goes. I was really happy with kind of where they went with the second movie, basically.
Yeah, no, I mean there were some parts that weren't so great, but I really enjoyed Tron Legacy. And it's interesting because the director who did the second one, who they were courting to do the third one, I guess that Disney decided to pull the plug on the whole thing because it was right around when Disney bought Lucasfilm. And they said they're going to be putting all their, you know, intellectual capital into getting Star Wars and Marvel going. Or, you know, keeping Marvel going and getting Star Wars going. So I'm glad to hear that they're gonna try to revive this project.
Okay, yeah. Now that was my last news story. So what else do you have?
Just a couple things about TV. Fans of Preacher, we are getting closer. It will return on Sunday, June 25th. Other than that, I mean, they released some character posters to kind of get people excited. They're on Dark Horizons if you want to see it. But no, I'm excited to see where they go in season two. I got one more, and then I got a Twitter story. Okay, so recently I said that The Middle to me is superior to Modern Family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as far as ratings, that is not the case. So much so that they've announced that Modern Family has been renewed for seasons 9 and seasons 10. And they have signed everybody to come back for 2 more seasons. At last report, the main stars were making $350,000 an episode.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Even though their take home remains far less than what they get for Big Bang Theory, the original stars of the Chuck Lorre comedy each get Friends level $1 million per episode. Even though they recently took $100,000 per episode cuts to help co-stars receive healthy raises. So I'm a huge hypocrite because I still watch Modern Family. Even I stopped watching Big Bang Theory because they're making too much money for me. I don't know. And Ty Burrell, who plays the dad Phil, is pointing out that by the end of its run, Modern Family will have been on TV longer than Alexander the Great was in power. Because according to him, Alexander the Great was his reign lasted 8.5 years.
Okay.
So yeah, it's they're making money hand over fist. In addition to that, there isn't a day, it seems like, where you can't turn on USA and there's Modern Family reruns at some point during the day. So, yeah. Okay, my last story has to do with Jessica Jones. TheVerge.com has a story, Jessica Jones trolling Iron Fist on Twitter is a stroke of genius. It is largely accepted by now that Iron Fist is Marvel's weakest Netflix series. I'm not going to go into their criticisms of the show. But with the Defenders on the way, the show is still an integral piece of the superhero crossover puzzle. Danny Rand and his glowing fist aren't going away anytime soon. And Marvel can't sweep either of them under the rug. So what's the best way to charge through this mess? Have some fun with it. So there is a tweet from Jessica Jones. Captain Jazz Hands has moves. And they have a little screenshot of the trailer kind of thing. Calling someone Captain Jazz Hands isn't exactly the burn of the century, but the genius is in the details. The original tweet was clearly written to comment on how lame Iron Fist seems not only in the above scene, but throughout his solo series. It's no secret that Finn isn't the most convincing kung fu warrior. So we'll be interested to see if this animosity is actually in the Defenders, as opposed to just on social media.
Right.
So yeah. And I'm going to do a quick check to make sure I didn't miss anything. Do you remember Unikitty from Lego Movie?
Uh-huh.
She's getting her own show on Cartoon Network.
Thanks.
So we'll see. Apparently there's another X-Men show coming out. The Gifted from Matt Nix and Bryan Singer.
Okay. Another show is in like Legion?
Yeah.
Or another show? Okay.
Another show, yeah, is in Legion.
I mean, because we were just talking about Unikitty, so I was thinking, you know, another show is in like
X-Men. No, it's going to be live action. It's going to be live action. Have you checked out the new Blade Runner trailer yet?
I have.
Okay. I haven't looked at it yet. I don't know if I want it. I don't know if I want to acknowledge its existence.
Okay. It was just different. Did you watch the first trailer? Because this is now like the second.
I've been shutting that part out of my life.
Okay. I watched the first trailer and I was a little more excited for it. I watched the second trailer. And it was like, it was more of the same. It wasn't anything, it didn't feel like too much more. It was a little bit, but I think it was, I think the first one was more tantalizing. I feel like they may be giving away too much.
Okay.
So I don't know. It did not excite me as much as the first one did. I'm still interested. I still really, really love Blade Runner. So we'll see. But yeah, I did watch it and I still want to see it. But maybe a little less so, just a smidge.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so that's gonna do it for news, and that's gonna do it for this episode of Back to You Box Office. So everyone, thank you for listening. For more episodes, or you know, you can send us a voicemail, leave comments on our blog. You can do all that at backseatproducers.com. You can also find back episodes of backseatproducers.com. Other than that. Again, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Art, say goodbye.
Goodbye.